Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
One of the world's leading consciousness researchers is the extraordinary Lynn McTaggart. Her decade-old book, which is The Field, is one of the most terrific works on the nature of reality that I have ever read. I found it seminal. It's such an important book that if you still haven't read it, I hope you'll, you know, take a moment now to put it at the top of your reading list. You really need to read this book. Lynn McTaggart's The Field, Michael Talbot's Three Decades Old, The Holographic Universe, and then finally, Craig Hogan's Your Eternal Self. If you read those three core books, your mind will be more open to what is actually going on than 99.997% of the people in the world. This will put you miles ahead in understanding not just the afterlife, not just, you know, our basic nature, but really everything that's going on. The hardest part, actually, of making sense of nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent, I say that a lot, afterlife evidence, is really getting our minds around the fact that the only thing that really exists is what you and I experience as human consciousness. Get your mind around that. Mainstream science offers us no help in making sense of what it is, what's really going on, and what is really unknown material reality. I mean, how can materialists help us understand what's not real, physical, tangible, what they can't touch? Well, that's the way reality is. So scientists are stuck, and they're stuck basically 100 years ago. Tragically, for more than a century, they've been bound by what is actually a scientific dogma of materialism. They used to call it that. Basically, they turned science into the religion of atheism. Even though for all of the same century, the greatest physicists have understood the fact that human consciousness is primary and matter is derivative from consciousness. I've given you these quotes. You need them again. Quantum physicists Max Planck, who actually was the pioneer, he got the Nobel Prize in 1918 as the father of quantum mechanics, and he said in 1931, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing, postulates consciousness." And, you know, Albert Einstein basically hated quantum mechanics, but even he understood this basic fact. He memorably said, and most people don't seem to know he said this, but he said this, "Concerning matter, we have been all wrong. What we have called matter is energy, whose vibration has been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter." So quoth Albert Einstein. Please think about this. The greatest scientists, the greatest physicists, the names on everybody's tongue have known for 100 years that the fundamental dogma of materialism is wrong and that consciousness is all that's real. So while they're still stuck, these poor, sad scientists, trying to find something that doesn't exist, people like our guest today, Lynn McTaggart, are the ones who are doing cutting-edge science now. She recently shared with us her wonderful book, which is The Power of Eight, Harnessing the Miraculous Energies of a Small Group to Heal Others, Your Life, and the World. I loved her book, and that I asked her to come back to talk about that, and I discovered she had a whole bunch of other stuff that she wanted to talk about. And I'm excited now to welcome Lynn. I'm so glad you're here, Lynn.
Oh, well, great, Roberta. What a intro. I mean, we might as well stop right now.
the thing is that when I find people who are honestly and without reservation trying to find the truth and not trying to be famous or get a hook somewhere or something, and that's you. I mean, I've seen you turn down an invitation to do something would have got you more famous, maybe in a certain part of the world, just because you were so focused on your work. I respect that more than you know. And frankly, the results you're developing are beyond anything I would have thought was possible. So I think you're leading the way, dear, and I want to make sure everybody knows that.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now, some people who may not have heard your other interview or know you from any other place might wonder who it is you are and what your background is, just briefly. So can you share that?
Sure. I mean, I am very unlike most people in this field in that I have a background as an investigative reporter. That's where I started out life. I was, you know, busting baby selling rings with hidden tape recorders and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. in my 20s. And I just segued into this in a really strange way because I have a magazine with my husband called What Doctors Don't Tell You, which has been running since 1989 in some form, first as a newsletter, now as an international magazine. And we study the medical literature to see what works and what doesn't. And I got curious about this because I kept finding very good scientific evidence of things like spiritual healing. There were good scientific studies. And I kept thinking to myself, if you can have a thought and send it to someone else and make that person better, then that alone undermines everything that we have been told about the way the world works.
Yes.
So I really set myself a quest to find out why, and I thought it was going to be fairly easy. I'll just talk to some scientists involved with consciousness research, and they'll give me the answers. I'll write it up, and that'll be that. But what I didn't expect was that this was going to be a massive journey that is now 20 years old. Where I just got hooked into this and more exploring the power of consciousness, the power of thought, and now the power of group thought, small and large group thought.
I think that's the part that I really have been missing in your work. I came across your fundamental book. I still think it's a fundamental book for a lot of us, the field. I came across that so early in my afterlife research when I was really putting it into high gear. Then I thought when the intention experiment came along, I thought, that's probably for later. So I've never read it. But I now understand that I have to read it. So I'm going to read it next. It's on order.
Wonderful. It's good to read them in order too. I mean, although The Power of Eight is also about the intention experiment and about it's the most practical of all of them, but each grew out of the other books, Roberta. I mean, the intention experiment was the itch I needed to scratch because, I had a lot of evidence. I mean, a lot of people do tell me that the field is the book that puts it all in perspective for them. And it is the overview book about all the new theories of consciousness. But there was an area of it, the idea that thoughts are an actual something with the capacity to change physical matter, that kept nagging at me. I kept thinking, how far are we taking this here? What are we talking about? Are we talking about just, a double slit experiment and shifting a quantum particle? Or are we talking about, curing cancer with our thoughts? So
yes,
That's what I wanted to test with the intention experiment. And I thought, being fairly skeptical of the whole business, I thought I wasn't really convinced this was going to work. But I knew a lot of scientists in consciousness research, and I also had lots of readers by then because the field's in 30 languages. And I just thought, well, I can just invite these readers every so often to come onto my website, and there'll be an automatic participatory audience to, they'll be my petri dish, essentially, and we will then send an intention to some well-targeted, thing in a laboratory. And that's what we've done since 2007. We've run now 32 experiments, and I didn't think that was going to work, but it really worked. We've had 28 of those 32 experiments have shown measurable, positive, mostly significant effects. And that's everything from trying to make seeds grow faster to trying to purify water to lowering violence in war-torn areas to even healing someone of PTSD. And there is no drug out there that has that kind of track record. There's very few things that have that kind of track record.
I would just, because you've said so much that's wise, I just want to make sure people are picking up on a few things from what you're saying. The first is this: every good researcher is skeptical. I was extremely skeptical about the afterlife when I started doing my research. And, you have to let the evidence convince you of what's true, but it convinces you reluctantly, as you see with Lynn. The other thing I'd like you to pick up is the fact that we're each on different journeys. We're called to do work. But what I needed from Lynn's work at that time was the field. I was trying to understand the nature of reality. I didn't, at that time, really care about the powers of our mind. So when I saw she was doing the intention experiment and the book had come out, I thought, I got to read that sometime. But it's not relevant to what I'm doing now, so I put it aside, the whole idea of reading it aside. That's going to happen in your life too. If you're listening to us, you are on a voyage of some kind, and you will pick up from us what you need to contribute to your voyage. But eventually you may double back and you may care more about some of the other things we're talking about. But Lynn and I are in perfect sync. We're just in totally different fields, and we're just doing the best we can with each of our fields. We're going to take a quick break, but what I want you to do just in this little break is just think about the wonder of the fact that thanks to a number of people, from Max Planck to Lynn McTaggart, we have found God. God's nothing like what we thought God would be. It turns out God is what we experience as human consciousness, but we're not God. It's not you and me. But as Lynn is about to show us, when we put our minds together, we aren't only becoming God. We are acting in our own lives and in the world in a way which helps to perfect the mistakes that human beings, with their negative creation, because negative thoughts are also creative, and I'm going to ask them more about that in the next hour. But we are truly participating in making this world a heaven on earth. Jesus came to tell us that was what we were to do, and thanks to people like Lynn, we are getting so much closer to doing it. So, Lynn, yeah, you did the intention experiment, thinking it wasn't going to work, the first one, and what were the results? How did it turn out?
Well, it worked. I mean, the very first one we did was with Dr. Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona. I know you've interviewed him. That's wonderful. He is up for anything, and he does it with rigorous research, too. But he's, you know, very open-minded, very noted psychologist. So he gamely came forward and said, yeah, I'll do this. So we had an audience in London, and we sent intention to try to change the photon emissions of a leaf. And we had a control leaf, too. And, you know, it was that simple. We had this little simple experiment. But afterward, and Gary's researchers punctured a lot of holes in each leaf so that they would have data points. You need to have a certain number of data points to compare in order to make something statistically significant. And the leaf that got sent intention, we asked it to burn brighter, because that actually is stressing the leaf, because when you make biophoton emissions go up, when an organism is stressed, they go up. But that it was so counterintuitive for us to say, turn out this leaf's light to our audience. We thought, no, we'll make it glow brighter.
Okay, now, I've already lost here. You know enough about leaves to know they give off light. This isn't just reflecting ambient light.
Not just leaves. All living things, including human beings. They send out a tiny, tiny current of light called biophoton emissions. These were discovered by the late, great Fritz Albert Popp, a German physicist, and it's acknowledged by many, many scientists around the world now, where they've been able to measure this tiny current of light. They've also realized that living things are using this light to communicate with the rest of its own organism, but also to communicate to other organisms. So Dr. Schwartz has a very sensitive equipment that can actually photograph this light and count it photon by photon.
Yes.
So we thought, yeah, let's start with a baby step. Let's start with something we can really measure and, you know, where we can measure change.
I didn't know this was what you were doing, or I would have read the book sooner. This is fun. So what did they find?
Well, the leaf that was sent intention was glowing so brightly, Dr. Schwartz said about the other leaf, it almost had a neglect effect. I mean, it was darker than usual, you know. It was bizarre, but we demonstrated this with this first little experiment. And also the thing was, we had a webcast image of the leaf. We chose one of the two leaves randomly. Scientists did not know which leaf we chose, by the way. And we had the audience just intend for that leaf over 10 minutes. And then the scientists, we said, we're done. They measured the result. Then I told them which leaf we had sent intention to. So we had a nice little controlled experiment of an audience of about 500, 600 in the UK, sending intention to a leaf sitting in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay, let's stop and respect that fact. The people doing this experiment, sending their thoughts, were in around the world, literally halfway around the world from Arizona.
Yeah.
And, I love it.
Yes. And, you know, that happened with another experiment we did soon after. We wanted to do something practical. So we moved on to seeds. And this time we had a really controlled experiment. Again, with Dr. Schwartz's lab, we had four sets of 30 seeds each. His lab assistant photographed all four sets of seeds, sent me the photographs, and the plan was to send intention to make them grow by a certain amount, by a certain number of days. So the first place I was going to do this in was Sydney, Australia. I had an audience of about 700-800, and we randomly chose one of the four photos. We didn't tell the scientists which photo we were choosing.
You chose a photo, and you didn't even tell anyone which one you chose, and you sent intentions to that group of plants halfway around the world.
That group of seeds halfway around the world. Yep.
They
were 8,000. I know. They were just seeds 8,000 miles away. But here's the interesting thing. So we sent intention to the seeds. After we finished sending intention, we told them we were done. They planted all four sets of seeds. They measured them 5 days later. And only then, after they'd finished their measurements, did we unblind the study and tell them which seeds we sent intention to. Now, we ran this six times, and every single time, the seed sent intention grew significantly higher than controls. And here's the interesting thing. I did it with different sizes of audiences, once over the internet with my audience just coming onto my website, and five other times with audiences in different places, from Sydney to Los Angeles to Dallas, Texas, etc. Now, here's the interesting point about it. First of all, we were not sending intention to the seeds. We were sending intention to a photographic representation.
That's what gets me. Yes. Totally.
Yes. And then secondly, we weren't in the same room. And in the case of Sydney, Australia, we were 8,000 miles away. So it started me thinking this kind of ability to hone in on something made me realize that we were, you know, creating a kind of psychic internet, that consciousness has this ability to, you know, work across the miles. Not only do thoughts affect things, but thoughts can affect things miles and miles away.
I hope everyone understands how profound this is, because I'm sure this is happening even when it's not being done as an experiment. And it could be your negative thoughts as well as your positive thoughts, which is something I'm going to ask Lynn more about. So let's think about the state of the world now, and let's begin to wonder how much our negativity, in this country especially, but actually all over the world in various ways, is actually causing things to get steadily worse. It's a non-benevolent cycle, and it seems to be going on. You've just convinced me that's probably the problem, Lynn, but we have only just started to talk about this. But I know that occurred to you much sooner than it occurred to me, and you began to experiment with peace intentions. Talk about that.
Well, after I'd done a lot of work on seeds and water and things like that and leaves, I was starting to get a little tired of all of that. So I thought, let's do something huge. And so I persuaded a whole scientific team this time, because I worked with different scientists. I didn't want it just to be one laboratory.
Yes.
I wanted it to be lots of laboratories. So I got a team of about four different scientists at different locations, including University of California, one of the top statisticians in consciousness research, Dr. Jessica Utz, to agree to be part of a team that we'd set up an intention and that we would run it over 8 days. And the reason we did 8 days, we would run it for set times over 8 days, is that we were trying to look at who'd ever tried to do something in mass consciousness before. And of course, the transcendental meditation groups have done a lot of attempts at lowering violence with mass meditation. And they've had some really interesting results. So we wanted to build on that, because this time we would actually set an intention to lower violence. So I needed a place. According to Dr. Utz, she told me, you've got to find a place where they've been counting the bodies for a couple of years before our experiment and are doing it consistently afterward. So I looked around the world. Well, in war zones, people don't.
Oh, yes.
You know, they don't and they lie about it. So we finally found a very reputable organization that was consistently logging in deaths and injuries in Sri Lanka, which at that time was undergoing a 25-year war. So we decided to set intention to lower violence in an area of northern Sri Lanka, which had been taken over by rebel forces. And this war, no one was winning. The government was making no headway. And the rebels, as I say, controlled the north. They had choked off the whole north of the country. So we set intention. This was back in 2008. We sent intention over these 8 days. And we then patiently waited over some months to see what happened. And Dr. Oates took the all of the data we had from 2 years before of weekly deaths and injuries to about 3 months afterward, and then worked on what the trend was to see if we had bucked the trend. Now, the scary part was during the very week of our intention, violence went up, way up. And that scared me a lot. I went, wait, this isn't supposed to happen. But then it plummeted to well below what it had been before. And it stayed lower. But that wasn't even, and yes, we did buck the trend. The violence did go down. But that wasn't the interesting part of it. What it turned out to be was that during that very week of intention, the government won some very decisive battles, which completely turned around the course of the war. Within a few months, they were able to recapture the north from the rebels. And with a few months after that, this 25-year war ended. It ended in a bloody finish, but it ended. And Sri Lanka is a very peaceful place now.
Yes, I didn't even think it would be a place. Oh, my goodness. So this is the beginning. Think about this, everyone. This is the beginning. And so you were encouraged. And what? Where did you go from there?
Well, we then decided to start looking at the 10th anniversary of 9/11. You know, I was tired of those buildings coming down, so I wanted to see if we could do something different. So I had done a lot of speaking in the Middle East, and my host was always Dr. Salah al-Rashid, who is like the Deepak Chopra of the Middle East. And I asked him to partner with me on this because he has a huge following among all of the Arab countries. And so he invited his audience and I invited my Western audience to take part in an intention where we would send intention to two provinces in southern Afghanistan. And we, you know, according to NATO statistics, we, you know, we all send intention over these 8 days again. We've replicated the same kind of experiment. And according to NATO statistics, which I got from a German general who was part of the combined forces there, there was an unprecedented lowering of violence in just those two areas as opposed to the rest of the country. So that was interesting.
Yeah, but interesting for sure.
But not as interesting as what kept happening with the peace experiments, which was that, yes, we were having some sort of effect, it would seem, although there's a lot of variables, you can say. It's only when you keep doing it and you keep getting results that things start getting interesting. But the more interesting thing was what was happening to my participants. With the Sri Lanka experiment, I had surveyed them, and I got back information like this. You know, I'm getting along better with my wife or my boss. I've made up with my estranged parents. I'm in love with everyone I come in contact with. You know, people were hugging strangers. I mean, something like half of all people said their relationships had fundamentally changed. Their lives were becoming more peaceful. And also they had described this altered state experience, being part of this intention experiment, had felt like they were part of a higher network, as one person put it, or they felt like they were in the tractor beam of Star Trek. They described loads of energy, feeling like they were in a mystical altered state, some people were crying uncontrollably. Other people were feeling like they had goosebumps coming up and down their arms. It was just extraordinary. And there were thousands of responses like this. Now, with the 9/11 anniversary, the really amazing thing happened on my Facebook and Instant Messenger pages, because the Muslims started writing to the Americans and vice versa. They started saying hello to each other. They started befriending each other, and they ended up starting to forgive each other.
Oh,
and
my word.
That was the really interesting piece of it. The rebound mirror effect was almost more significant than actually what was going on to the target.
So let's stop and think about this. First, what were the people doing to participate? Were they just sending good thoughts to a certain place, or what did you tell them to do?
I had on my website, first of all, they didn't know the target. And we had pages that our webmaster controlled that would be flipped over at a certain time. So people had to sign in. Then they got onto it. Then we explained how they got into a certain kind of mind state and head state based on a number of principles I've compiled from a lot of intention masters that are in the intention experiment, how to do intention, you know, based on a kind of mix of ancient wisdom with indigenous practitioners of this and also modern things that work in the laboratory. So those are the certain techniques that I know now maximize intention. So we had people do that. Then we revealed the target. Then we revealed the intention statement. Everybody had to think the same thought at the same time, essentially, over about a 10-minute period while some music played.
And you said what the thought was. And they
oh, yeah, yeah. You know, okay. Our intention is to lower violence by, you know, I think it was 10%. You know, we had a very, very specific intention, as we always do.
These people didn't know one another. They were all over countries, all over the world, and yet By doing this process, they were able to influence what was going on in a whole other country in a way which you could measure, right? I mean, it was obvious to the researchers that the result was positive.
Well, ours was just data taking from NATO. So, yeah, it was obvious. This has been the situation with literally every peace intention experiment. We've done five of them. Every single one we've done has had some sort of measurable effect like this, and an extraordinary rebound effect among the participants.
Now, you did too, that you talk about on your website that you now have, I think, results for. One was in the Middle East, which is a very important place to be doing this, and the other was in one of the worst places in this country for violence in the United States. So that's we'd like to hear how that turned out. Please tell us about those two experiments.
Sure. So in September, and it was over 6 days from September through October, first week of October, I worked with Gaia TV to do six broadcasts that would culminate every day in our participation, my audience's participation in a peace intention experiment. And I wanted to choose the most violent place in America. So according to the Wall Street Journal and many other places, the most violent place in America is a part of northern St. Louis, Missouri. Outdoes Chicago and all of those other places. It's this one area, the Natural Bridge Avenue, part of it, and the neighborhood is called Fairground, and it's Fairground consistently is, you know, it gets a D- for just so many areas, from, you know, crime to education to etc. It's a really tough area, and so this was really easy to track because the St. Louis Police Department keep very careful records of violent crimes against the person and property crimes in every neighborhood in St. Louis, as well as the place as a whole. So what we did was we sent intention over these 6 days, and then we waited for 6 months. And then Dr. Utz, the one who had done the Sri Lanka experiment, once again, I sent her data that was from September 2014, to March 2018. So from 3 years before our experiment to 6 months afterward, so that she could plot out what had happened. Now, she looked at four areas. She looked at violent crime in Fairground, our neighborhood we focused on, property crime in Fairground, violent crime in all of St. Louis, and property crime of all of St. Louis. And she found that for property crime, violent crime in all of St. Louis, and property crime in Fairground, all of those areas were going way up and had continued to go up. For violent crime in Fairground, the target of our intention, it plummeted. And it completely bucked the trend. It was 43% lower than it had been the year before. So it was the only area in that whole area where violent crime was going down.
Oh, and my goodness.
Property was going up. Property crime was going up. So it was only violent crime, which we focused on. So that's, you know, that's rape, murder, you know, armed robbery, all of those kinds of things. That all went down significantly.
Wow. All right. Well, that is extraordinary. How do we move that to cover larger areas? Because you're focusing on smaller areas. Would this work as well if, for example, you focused on a whole state or a country?
Yeah. Well, what we did was, I mean, we've always focused on areas where we could actually measure what was going on. But again, I want to really just come back to the whole rebound effect. What's really important is what happens among the participants. And to show you that, I could talk to you about the Middle Eastern experiment, because that was really historical. I mean, we never expected this. I was working with Dr. Al Rashid, whom I mentioned earlier. I was presenting for a summit he was holding from a studio he has in the UK, where I live. And this studio has the amazing technology to be able to broadcast to 9 different sites. So we had cameras in conference rooms in 8 different Muslim countries, you know, everything from Saudi Arabia to Kuwait to Bahrain to Oman, et cetera, Jordan, et cetera. So we had audiences in all of those places. And then the 9th camera was in an auditorium in Jerusalem filled with Israeli Jews. So we had got, I had worked with a documentary maker in Israel who wanted to do some work for peace, as well as Dr. Al Rashid, to put this thing together. So we decided to focus on Jerusalem because it's a place that belongs to everybody.
Right.
You know, all religions have a stake in Jerusalem. And so, and including the Muslims, they have the Dome of the Rock, as well as the, you know, the Wailing Wall for the Jews, et cetera, and the Way of the Cross for the Christians. So we send intention to an area of the old city that is suffering from a lot of violent crime, Damascus Gate area. But here's the interesting thing. Because of the technology, I could be beamed into all those different audiences, but I also saw there were 9 different screens up at my place at any one time, and I could call on different people in the different countries to speak, and they would be heard by everybody else. And the Arabs started, you know, we had people from different Arab countries saying to the Jews, "Your God is my God. I love you." And the other ones were saying, the Jews were saying back to the Arabs, "We love you, sister. This is enough. Enough of this violence. We need to get together." I mean, I was sitting there with Dr. Al Rashid and our mouths were open. And the story broke all over the Middle East. I mean, we had MPs from Kuwait saying, "This is the way forward." We had journalists in Jerusalem and in Israel saying it's measures like this that are going to get over the war, and, you know, not political things. And I found that really fascinating. And this once again demonstrated that, you know, we can use this power of, call it group prayer if you want, that can, this really heals. It doesn't just heal the target. It really heals the participants.
That's the most extraordinary thing I've heard in quite a while. These people who have been throwing rocks at one another, I'm amazed. So it affected them too. Was that a longer effect? Did you talk to them afterwards, or would you do that at a later experiment?
Well, I mean, they are affected. They have been affected. They are really resolved to try to work things out despite what's going on with the political situation. They are, you know, they want peace, and they have been touched by it. And the Arabs said to me later, some of the Arab women said, you don't understand how profound this is for us. I mean, we have never actually even seen Jews. We are told they have horns growing out of their heads.
Oh.
So the idea that they can connect together,
yes,
and talk back and forth, the Jews and the Arabs, was just amazing. So we're doing this again in the autumn. We're doing another Middle Eastern experiment, and it seems to be more necessary than ever. So we, wow, want to involve, you know, people around the world. And we did in this last one, it wasn't just the Jews and the Arabs who took part. I also ran it live on my YouTube channel, and we had people from all over the world doing the same at the same time.
That is so wonderful. This is just a seed, everyone. She started with a seed with plants. She's starting with a seed of peace with people, and it's already bearing fruit. Now, I know they always say when they show you something amazing, don't try this at home. Well, we can try this at home, and Lynn is going to tell us how we can.
Well, in my book, The Power of Eight, I have scaled all of this down to little groups of eight, and I've been working with groups of eight for 10 years now, too, and what I have found is extraordinary healing that goes on just in little groups of eight, where you have somebody in the group with some sort of health challenge, or even outside the group, and the group is just sending intention to that person, and we've had some, I've documented thousands now of people who have had amazing healings. You know, a woman with stroke who couldn't focus her eyes, focuses her eyes perfectly after this. A woman who was scheduled for knee replacement, her knee was, she could do a deep squat afterwards. She could hardly, her knee was wobbling all over the place. A woman who had a dislocated shoulder, and the shoulder shifted right back during the little intention. So this is something in my book, The Power of Eight, has complete instructions for how to set up your own little group of eight and to do this for yourself, for your loved ones, for people outside the group. And you don't even have to be present with the people. I have with my website, lynnmctaggart.com/forum, that forum enables people to set up virtual groups, and we have hundreds of groups forming where you can just put a notice up saying, hey, I'm in this time zone, and I need some other people to be part of my group of eight, or join an existing group that's going on. And, you know, people are having and recording amazing results.
So how did you choose eight? I mean, I remember that when I read the book, but that was 6 months ago, you've chose it as an optimal number.
Well, it was by accident. I mean, I wasn't sure how to scale this down to a workshop. So I was kicking it around with my husband, and I said, I don't know, maybe I'll just put people in groups of eight and have them send healing intentions to a member of the group. It was totally random.
So if you only have six, it might work.
It works.
Right,
it works.
Great.
Oh, yeah. It is like a Goldilocks number, Roberta. You know, it's kind of not too big and not too little, but
yes,
it'll work with five or more. And I always think 12 or less, because once you get more than 12, it starts becoming a little unwieldy.
It is. It is. Now, you're going all over and teaching this, aren't you? If someone's listening to this right away, how could they get in touch with you? What's your website first? And then where can they find out what you're doing now?
Okay, lynnmctaggart.com. I'm speaking in Vancouver in June, and but it's totally sold out, and I'm running a workshop. I've got a big talk with Jean Houston and Jude Curvin and a bunch of others at the United Palace in New York in the summertime in July. I have a workshop there too, some other talks in New York in July, and some other events in the autumn. So please check out our website. We're always doing things like that. I always run a big masterclass, an intention masterclass, Power of Eight masterclass, starting in January every year. And it runs for a whole year where I work with groups of eight. And also I'm running a big webinar called Become a Better Healer with the Power of Eight, which is really focused. It's an advanced course focused for healers of all persuasions, whether it's alternative practitioners, nurses, doctors, people who try to do healing in their lives. And it's really getting people to focus on how their thoughts and the client or patient's thoughts are affecting their healing or not, and what to do about it, and also how to use groups to serve, to really maximize and amplify your effects.
I should just say, this is June of 2018 where Lynn and I are sitting. So if it's far in the future, all you have to do is go to Lynn McTaggart, LynnMcTaggart.com. You'll see she's a lovely person. She looks like her voice, actually. And you'll find a lot of things you can do to begin your journey to a place where you are in control of your life, and then you are also in control of the world. Lynn, I'm so glad we did this. Now, I understand you're going to be coming back in the summer because you have a new book coming out, right?
I have my book, The Power of Eight, is coming out in paperback in September. So, yes, I'd love to come back, Roberta.
All right. Well, we always have fun when we do this. Consider yourself hugged, dear, all the way across the pond, and we'll be talking very soon.
Thanks so much, Roberta.
Meanwhile, everyone, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and I'm so glad you could be with us today. Hasn't this been fun and fascinating? Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, and you never will end. And when you really understand all the implications of that fact, hard to say it, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Trust me on that. It's transformational when you understand who and what you really are. Next week, we're going to be visiting with Riley Haggerty. Ryan is a dedicated man who is doing the precious work of documenting extraordinary afterlife-related phenomena from 100 and more years ago. You'd think there'd be no need for that. There's a critical need for it. He was with us just over a year ago to talk about the Bang Sisters. You can look that one up. They were very important early 20th century mediums, and he's back now with a wonderful book called Direct Voice. I love this new book, and I love Riley's mission. Most modern people are totally unaware of what was going on 100 years ago when those that we used to think were dead were undertaking a full court press to help us understand that they are eternal and so are we. So join us next week and please be prepared to marvel. This week, for the second time, our guest has been the wonderful British consciousness researcher Lynn McTaggart. I think of Lynn as sort of my guru in this field. The Field is her first book and the one that introduced her to me. She knows things, she understands things in such a broad range of fields that she can put together and synthesize experiments, understandings that very few people on Earth could do. And she's open-minded and skeptical, which are the two key things that every scientist must be, but frankly, no scientists are now. Please understand that what you are hearing today, what you've heard from Lynn, is the beginning of the transformation of the world. We do know now the nature of God. We do know why so many things have gone wrong, and we do know how to fix them. And it is people like Lynn, it's just a handful of people doing this work, who are building a body of work which is going to be used very soon to bring the kingdom of God on earth. So I brought it back to Jesus. He tried to tell us this 2,000 years ago, and it's taking people like Lynn to help him understand it. As you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together, and for young children, The Fun of Meeting Jesus, and the upcoming, The Fun of Growing with Jesus. You can order them through bookstores or on Amazon, and the adult books, of course, are available as audiobooks. If you want to talk about anything at all, don't never forget, I'm right here. Just go to robertagrimes.com, send me a contact through the link there, and I will answer your... Sometimes it takes a few days, but I will answer your question provided you've given me your email address. And you can always find past episodes of Seek Reality on webtalkradio.net, on iTunes, through the Seek Reality app that you can find for free in the iTunes store, or at Dream Vision 7 Radio a year later. Meanwhile, please remember that this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and you are eternal. We all are. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you in particular are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.